If you're in the armed forces, a lot of things are different for you compared to civilians. That includes your slang. It's full of colorful turns of phrase and colorless abbreviations and initials, and a few terms you would not use in church. The slang conveys information quickly among people with shared specialized knowledge. For newcomers, learning military slang is a part of the process of adjusting to military life. I'm Jim Meadows, and today on Focus, we'll look at military culture through its slang with Iraq War Army veteran Eric Swenson and dictionary editor and slang specialist Grant Barrett. Military slang today on Focus. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Don't call your gun a firearm. It's a weapon, and if you're out of ammunition, you might say you're black on ammo. A couple of examples of recent military slang, and my apologies for my voice being a little crooked right now, but it'll smooth up. We'll hear a lot more on this edition of Focus devoted to how people in the armed forces talk amongst themselves. To do this, we'll be talking to a veteran and to an expert on slang. And we also want to hear from you and your experience with the subject. Are you a veteran? Do you come from a military family? Are there words from the military that are part of your everyday speech? We'd love to hear from you this hour on Focus. Our toll-free number at Focus is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. If you'd like to call and talk about your experiences and knowledge of military slang, you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Also welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. And before my voice goes entirely, I better introduce my guest, Eric Swenson. He's an Iraq War Army veteran from Paxton, am I right?
Oh, that's where I live currently, yes.
Okay. Practical experience in recent Army slang. Eric's talked about veterans' experiences on WILL before. And he took part in a panel that we hosted last month in Champaign to mark the broadcast of the Uni High student documentaries on area veterans. Welcome to Focus.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And joining us on the phone also is Grant Barrett. He is a lexicographer, dictionary editor who specializes in slang. He's also the co-host of Away with Words, heard on many public radio stations across the country. Welcome to Focus, Grant.
Hey there.
And we're talking about military slang. Let me start with you by asking, you know, when you first went into the Army, what was your first experience with hearing slang? Was it a challenge to deal with? How did it affect your experience there?
Well, there's definitely a very steep learning curve when you first join the military. I came right out of high school. I think I graduated in May. I went right in July. And then right off the bat, you know, you're going straight into basic training. And new terminology is coming at you left and right. But the one really classic example, which you've already alluded to, is the term weapon. And I think everybody encounters this in basic training fairly early on. There's a big moment that you always experience when you get your first weapon issued to you, which is usually an M16 A2 rifle. And the drill sergeants march you down to the armory, and you stand in a long line. It takes forever to go through it all. And you march through this. You go up to a big glass window, and your rifle comes through to you, and you take it outside. And every time, inevitably, the first thing that happens is somebody comes out. They're excited. They're smiling. You feel like you're really finally part of the military. And you turn to the person standing next to you and say, "Look, I finally got my gun." And the drill sergeants, I mean, you know, they're just waiting like hawks. They know this is coming. Their job isn't to make you comfortable. And they hear that term, and boy, you're in trouble right off the bat. You just got in, and you're doing push-ups, and you're learning very quickly that you have to get it right.
Why not say gun?
That's a good question. You have me on that one. That's just the way it is.
The other way around, why say weapon? Not firearm, not rifle. Can you say anything?
You could say rifle. You could say M16 A2. But weapon is the blanket general term for what you have.
And it sounds like they make that deliberately, sort of a rite of passage.
It must be. And it sticks with you all the way through. That is the one term that will absolutely never change the whole time you're in the military. It will always be a weapon start to finish.
Were there any other slang terms or terminology terms mm-hmm. or jargon terms that came up immediately in that way?
Well, another classic rite of passage is the good old-fashioned MRE, the meal ready to eat. You get one fairly early on in basic training, and everybody sort of knows it's coming. You know at some point you're going to eat an MRE, and you've heard about it before, but you've never actually tasted that quintessential Army food. And I can still remember to this day my first MRE, and I don't think I'll ever lose it. It was, we were getting up early for some kind of training. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. It was pitch black outside. It was cold, and we were issued MREs to eat, and it was pork and shrimp jambalaya, ice cold, first thing in the morning after I woke up. It was horrible.
And you would, it sounds like you would never call this anything but an MRE.
There might have been some slang or other terms, but pretty much, yeah, it's just always an MRE.
Okay, so different from any other food that you would be having along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just being MREs of what you ate when you were in Iraq stationed out there?
Well, MRE was a common staple food for a lot of people. Not for everybody. If you were on a large military base, maybe in the green zone, like in Baghdad or something, there'd be really large dining facilities where you could get hot food that was actually halfway decent. At a lot of smaller outposts, the outpost that I worked on, for example, had a dining facility where you could go and you could get something hot to eat.
Other slang, were you just picking it up along the way, and how is it being used?
Well, you start to pick some up in basic training, but really, the slang and the terms come really hard and fast when you actually get to your unit. When you're finished with all your training and you actually go to the environment that you're going to be working in for the rest of your time in the military, you start to pick it up very quickly there.
And some of this was about the, you know, directly involved with the work you were doing, where they're like maybe abbreviations, mm-hmm. things like that in terms of the work you were doing every day?
Well, the Army loves acronyms. There's an acronym for just about everything. And Army language is really sterile, actually, very professional terms that are going to be used in reports, and I just don't think anybody can talk that way. So something like SOP, Standard Operating Procedure, or TOC, Tactical Operating Center, these things come at you very quickly, and you have to pick them up.
We're talking about military slang, in this case with an Iraq War Army veteran. And what years were you stationed out in Iraq?
I was in Ar-Ramadi, Iraq, from 2006 to 2007.
Okay, and Eric Swenson, now in Paxton and studying at the University of Illinois. If you have some examples of military slang for us, give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. You can email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu, and our phone number again, 1-800-222-WYLL. Besides phone or email, you can send them to us on Twitter or Facebook at Focus 580. Any terminologies, you know, slang labels that you were using in talking about, you know, certain people, certain types of officers or ranks that might have conveyed some judgment or feeling about them?
Well, these terms are everywhere in the military, and it's hard to pick a favorite. I guess a good classic example to go with is the term butter bar.
Butter bar.
Yes.
Sounds tasty, but what is it really?
Well, that refers to a second lieutenant in the Army, which is the lowest rank of officer. And anybody familiar will know that a lieutenant's rank insignia is a single bar, just almost a simple rectangle. And a second lieutenant's is a gold color, which alludes very easily to the term butter bar. And now a butter bar is got to be one of the most universally despised people in the military. These are young officers that are fresh out of training. They're fresh out of the schools that they go through coming to your unit. And I think that a really good way to associate this is it's almost like if you're working in maybe a machine shop or something like that, and you've been there a long time and you're really familiar with the way you do business and how to get things done and you're good at your job, and all of a sudden you get this brand new manager who's fresh out of college and thinks he knows everything.
It sounds like Lieutenant Fuzz in the Beetle Bailey comic strip. I was actually looking up a gold bar, you said.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's him. you got to wonder if they're the targets of the slang, do the second lieutenants have their own slang? Or did did different groups, and that really goes to the next question, because you're in a particular group of the armed forces in a particular place doing a particular type of work. Did you ever come across other units and get the feeling that some of their terminology was different from yours because of the work they did?
Certainly. This is a little tough because you're often so enclosed and encapsulated in the work that you're doing within your own job and in your own unit that you don't necessarily encounter the terms that that other people use. Specifically, though, I do know a couple good examples from just people that I worked with and in my own unit. A classic was Sunbreak. We worked a lot of nights often. Sometimes you could go months without ever seeing the sun. And smokers naturally got to take a 15-minute break whenever they felt like they needed that that nicotine. And so us non-smokers, we just didn't have an excuse to get outside and chat and get a little bit of sunshine. And so after a while, we realized there was a need for a sunbreak once in a while, and you had to go out and take off your jacket and get some rays.
This is something you felt that had that already been developed, or did that develop while you were there?
No, that was spontaneous. That was us, and we realized that was something we needed and worked for us. And I've never encountered that anywhere else.
Okay, you mentioned the acronyms. Can you give me an idea of how they would come up in a conversation or in talking about your work?
Something that everybody is probably familiar with, all of your listeners, is going to be the term IED, which is improvised explosive device. And that was a really common weapon that we encountered throughout our time in Iraq, and I think was a recurring issue for all kinds of different units. People are going to be familiar. If you hear the term IED, you might make the association roadside bomb. You might think traumatic brain injury. And if you make those associations, you're doing a pretty good job. But actually, even a simple common term like that has a lot of nuance to it. And it wasn't just these kind of roadside bombs. IEDs could be made out of everything. The key term here is improvised. So, for example, when I was a kid, right, and I would walk around town or down a country road, I would kick a rock ahead of me, right? I think just about everybody does that. And actually, the insurgents in Iraq realized that Americans like to do that. We like to kick things when we're walking. And so they would turn tin cans and pieces of trash, actually, into IEDs. When you kicked it, you would encounter that kind of explosion.
So that's part of the things that IED meant for you, a potential, I mean, not just, to say, a homemade bomb or an amateurish bomb, but a potentially hidden device.
Well, certainly. And I guess what I'm trying to emphasize is just this huge, huge range. It's just, even with a simple universal term like that, it can just mean a lot of things.
I want to bring in our other guest here at this point, and that's Grant Barrett, who is something of an expert on slang. And Grant, I'm wondering, as you listen to what Eric is telling me, does this say anything about how slang develops? It's not really clear from listening to this how we got from in the area of not having these words to the point where all of a sudden they're widespread and commonly understood. How do these words grow?
Well, it's particularly interesting to talk about in terms of the military because each theater, each war, each branch of service has its own particular batch of slang. Now, there's some overlap. There's some historical continuity. But you can pretty much go back into the historical records, pull up some slang, and I could probably tell you what war they were from, when it was used. What's really interesting about the stuff that has come out of Iraq is that we had new encounters for the first time with the Iraqis. We saw them first in the first Gulf War, but Americans really hadn't encountered those people, that culture, in quite a long time, and the British had. And so some of the slang that we have that's come over, for example, Haji, actually comes from terms that were originally used by the British when they were there in the 20s and 30s. But to get to the larger issue, the larger question here is slang comes about because there's a concentrated effort where a bunch of people have a common intense mission and they have to work closely together. And what they do is they improvise shorthands. They need brief ways of expressing complicated ideas or complicated words. Now, this can manifest as slang or it can manifest as jargon, but they both do that job. They both get a point across very quickly. If to go back to the beginning of the conversation and talk about weapon versus gun, we have a really interesting point here, which is that a gun can mean a lot of things. And so if you are told on your first day with a weapon that that is only a weapon, you are adding clarity. And if everybody calls that a weapon, that clarity continues. Now, it's interesting if we go to later in the conversation and talk about IED. It's absolutely essential that you understand that an IED can be lots of things. But as Eric said, the improvised is the key word here, and you're going to understand that from the start. But in the intensity of the experience engenders a kind of language creation. It is a natural compulsion for human beings to make new language when they encounter something unusual, when they encounter something as a group, and when they need to talk about it, and perhaps kind of record it in their minds for later use.
And quickly, if I could, if I could get a clarification, slang versus jargon, how do they differ?
Jargon is the language of the workplace or an industry, more or less. Jargon is official, and if you have a doctor in New York City, he's going to use the same jargon as a doctor in San Francisco. Slang tends to be for much smaller groups, and it's about people who have a common interest, common ideas, or a common attitude. So a soldier speaks jargon because that's what they're taught by their CO and the service around them, but they also speak slang because that's what they need to have unity with the people that they serve with.
So so IED might be an example of jargon?
Yes, but if you call it a DBIED, a donkey-born IED, that's going to be slang.
Donkey-born IED, do you know this one, Eric?
Actually, I had forgotten. It's been so long, but I did, in fact, encounter that term.
What's a donkey-born IED?
I think it lends a pretty clear image of what it is, actually.
It's something on an animal, essentially.
Yep, exactly. Explosives strapped to an animal one way or the other and, swat it on the rear and send it into the across the line. But it's interesting. You can have this one term, which is a slight shift of attitude and usage. It's slang or jargon. Again and again, we see this happen. We go back to the term butter bar. It's really interesting. So that's a second lieutenant in the Army, right? Well, it hasn't always been a butter bar. Sometimes they were called brown bars or second Louis or a 2LT or boot. And each one of these has a specific time and place that they were used. And so you're not going to have a lot of unity without all this language kind of gluing together your common shared ideas, experiences, and principles.
In the promo for today's show, I use the word sunbreak that you've already explained, Eric. I used the jargon term PX, which may be something that also predates the particular conflict that you were in, but PX sounds like it's been around for a while. Grant, do you have any familiarity with that?
PX says this is the place where we go for supplies, our food or groceries, that sort of thing.
And that's what it was for you, Eric?
It was. Certainly when you were at home in the United States, you would have a post PX you go to for grocery shopping and things like that. But when you were deployed, if you encountered a PX, the majority of the stuff that they would sell would actually be things from home that you would want, like magazines or like junk food and things like that.
How far back does PX go? Would you know, Grant?
Yeah, it's just about 100 years. It goes back to the First World War, and it's an abbreviation for post-exchange. As Eric said, your PX depends upon where you are. Sometimes it was simply a place to get mail. Sometimes it was a place to get socks and stamps. Other times you could actually, it was almost like a mall. You could pretty much get anything you wanted.
We're talking about military slang today on Focus with Eric Swenson. He's an Iraq War Army veteran. And with Grant Barrett, who is a lexicographer and an expert on slang, co-host of the public radio program Away With Words. We'd love to hear from you on your knowledge of military slang, perhaps from a different conflict than Iraq with its own vocabulary. Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. You can email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 1-800-222-WILL. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. The third word I used in the promo for today's show, or the third phrase, was Ranger pudding.
Hmm.
And you have some definite experience with Ranger pudding?
Well, I don't know if it actually comes from the Rangers or not, but there were components in an MRE that you could mix together to make a kind of a paste. I think usually something like coffee creamer or cocoa, if you could get it, would go into that. And you could eat it a variety of ways, put it on a cracker or eat it by itself out of a tin. Some people actually would take it and put it in a tin, and you'd put it in the engine compartment of a Humvee where you could heat it up and cook it into something more like a brownie or like a cupcake. And actually, it was pretty darn good, all things considered.
It sounds like something something unintentional from the MREs that apparently worked pretty well.
I think the only way to get a really good meal out of an MRE is to do something unintentional with it.
Grant, I'm wondering, have there been past military slang terms involving food in general, whether it's Army rations or anything else?
There always have been. C rations would be a term that the older veterans would probably know. MRE is another one of those examples where it's jargon if you think it means meals ready to eat, but it's slang if you think it means meals rejected by everyone. Mm. The food in the military is notorious for being completely unappetizing, yet sustaining. So it's got the calories and the vitamins and the fat and salt that you need. The food terms are just... there's no end to them. The dish that you're making there, the Ranger pudding, reminds me of Pruno, which is the ad hoc illicit alcohol made in prisons. It's that same kind of human innovativeness under duress.
I'm thinking back to stuff from the Civil War. There was a song about goober peas. I don't know if that's a slang term in itself.
Goober peas? I don't know the song. Will you sing it?
Something along the lines of peas, eating goober peas. Something about it being delicious, I think, said sarcastically, eating goober peas. Several verses. I can maybe try looking them up. The other thing from the Civil War I had heard of that was talked of disparagingly and which still exists in some form somewhere, I believe, are Necco wafers. But as far as what terms came along with them, I don't know. But that's going back about 160 years, so that's a... that is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, that's a good haul. Oh, goober peas go back at least to the 1830s as another name for peanut, but it's varied from being very standard in the southern part of the United States to being seeming unusual in the northern and northeastern parts of the United States. But some people still call them goober peas or just goobers.
Okay, We are talking about military slang. Eric Swenson, I was wondering, did some of this slang or jargon, I mean. Was it essential to the point that there are things that are really hard to talk about without going into the terminology and the slang?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a big challenge a lot of veterans face when they return from the military or exit the military and prepare for civilian life is just learning how to translate your experiences and what you've done into terms that civilians can even understand.
Can you give an example of that?
Well, I think a really good, simple example was that when I was in the Army, I was in 1-9 Infantry Regiment, 2BCT, 2ID, which...
I have no idea. What did you say?
2BCT, 2ID. Well, this is like probably more jargon than slang,
it's conveying a fair amount of meaning here.
Right, which would mean that I was in the 2nd Brigade Combat Team of the 2nd Infantry Division. And, you know, this is no different than if you worked at, you know, Illinois Public Media. You know, you have to take that and convey, you know, where you work to somebody. And for something to change that long, you know, list of numbers and letters into a terminology people can understand and can receive from that where you worked and what you did is actually a really big challenge.
Okay, but that was so a pretty quick way of getting it done then.
Yeah, and that's key, right?
Let's go ahead and take a call. And on line one, we're talking from Lynn from Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Thank you. I would like to give an example of very old slang from the Navy, certainly probably from the days of the sailing ships. That was to call candy sweets. Pogey bait, which the old salts would buy a bunch of candy before they started out for their sailing ships in order to lure cabin boys down into the hold for immoral purposes.
Okay.
Really?
Pogey. I mean, what does pogey itself stand for?
Candy.
The pokey is the candy, or pokey is the person that they're trying to get hold of?
No. Yeah, pokey is the person, and pokey bait then is the candy that lures the person.
Okay, So this is not just one slang term. It's actually a a couple connected together. Rick, thank you very much for your call. That certainly brings it up to a new level. Let me take it out to line four and say hello to Lynn from Champaign. I was actually speaking to Rick from Crawford County in that earlier call. Thank you, Rick. But and we seem to have, or do we have it? I'm sorry for the slight confusion. Line four, Lynn from Champaign, good morning. No, we've lost Lynn. Maybe we can get Lynn back in a few moments. Pokey Bait, Pokey is, I thought I was reading somewhere in prepping for the show that it has to do with POG, but yeah. I don't remember what a POG is.
Well, this is actually was really, really common slang in the Army when I was in it, and a POG was an acronym that stood for Person Other Than Grunt, which was it would be somebody who worked in more of an office environment or something, somebody who wasn't an infantryman or somebody who was laying mortars or guns or something like that. And it was generally used as a somewhat derogatory term, but I encountered it all the time. And actually, it's fascinating to hear the history of the term pokey bait because we use that a lot too, but it had lost sort of that really negative connotation there. And we use it very universally just to mean candy or junk food. And a lot of times that was beef jerky.
Okay. But in this case, the POG, the person other than a grunt, was a cabin boy from the way that our caller Rick heard it.
And I've never heard that before. It's fascinating.
A grunt, person other than grunt, is POG, is that a phrase you had heard before?
That's what's called a backronym, which is the term existed before it was turned into an acronym by people who were trying to explain its origins. The origin of POGI is covered in mist. We're not really sure, perhaps related to pokey, perhaps related to terms for a poorhouse or a prison, but it's in the big origin unknown category. Slang is often like that. It has deep roots that we can't uncover.
So what you're saying is that the word predates the explanation that Eric just gave for
it. By probably 100 years.
Wow. Well, we're talking about military slang here on Focus. We're going to take a short break right now, but we'll be back with more talk about that with veteran Eric Swenson, with Grant Barrett, our slang expert, and with you, with all the experiences and examples that you can give us. This is Focus on WYLL. We're back on Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're continuing our discussion of military slang and its role in military culture. My guests are Iraq War Army veteran Eric Swenson and dictionary editor and slang specialist Grant Barrett. He is the compiler of the Official Dictionary of Unofficial English and the Oxford Dictionary of American Political Slang. And we want to hear what you have to tell us about military slang. Call us with your stories and examples at 1-800-222-9455. Or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. The phone number again is 1-800-222-WILL. I found some lyrics for Goober Peas online, and an example of a chorus of a verse would be, "When a horseman passes, the soldiers have a rule to cry out their loudest, 'Mister, here's your mule.' But another custom enchantinger than these is wearing out your grinders, eating goober peas," which I guess gives you a general idea of how much of this stuff they were eating, perhaps a little more than folks wanted to. No songs about MREs that you know of, Eric.
I'm not familiar with any, no.
Okay. We were listening to the example of pokey bait as our caller Rick talked about. I think there's some military slang we're probably not going to quite mention on the air. Is that the case? I mean, is there just some stuff you wouldn't want to say in polite company?
Yes, that is very true.
What was it like coming out of military life into civilian life with all this slang in your head, so much of it a part of your daily vocabulary and a way of thinking about the work and the world ahead of you? What was it like going back into civilian life and people who might not know what you were talking about?
Well, actually, even just learning to not swear constantly, I think was a big challenge. And actually, I think that was hard to not do really early on. After my basic training, even, I'd started swearing a lot. And so if I was at like a dinner with family friends or something like that. If I wasn't paying close attention to what I was saying, that would come slipping out. And then also when you leave the military, actually one of the first terms that I wanted to lose was the term weapon, because nobody in the civilian world says that, right? And I actually think that in general, if you see a young man somewhere and he uses the term weapon, it's probably a fair bet that he's either still in the military or has freshly left.
Have you seen any movies or TV shows about the war in Iraq? And are the lines that the actors say there realistic and correct to what your experience was?
Well, I will add the caveat, which is that I don't watch a lot of TV shows or movies based on the wars in Iraq or Afghanistan, for a variety of reasons. But one of them is that it never really feels accurate, certainly. And actually, when you think about it, in a movie, you're trying to keep an audience's close attention for an hour and a half. And I think a lot of times the things that people say in movies are really over-dramatized. A lot more intensity is put into them than what you would actually say in real life. And then a lot of times the slang and the jargon is misplaced. There's nothing worse than watching a movie or a TV show when I actually do pick one up and the helicopter comes in and they say, you know, get to the chopper, right? Because nobody in the Army actually says chopper, and it loses you right there. That's a big eye roll moment when you're watching.
Grant Barrett, I can think of just about every episode of MASH that I ever saw, I think the word chopper came in. When did folks in the Army say chopper?
I don't know if they ever actually did say chopper. I suspect it's one of those words that screenplay writers really love. They tend to borrow from each other and not actually go back to the original source material.
So it's not necessarily military slang. It's sort of Hollywood military slang, a sort of separate world.
Yeah, we find that again and again. There's a couple times in the history of slang where some amazing things have happened, where Hollywood has made, it happened with the Old West and happened with the Mafia, where Hollywood made a big splash with a movie or a series of movies. And then people who were writing, say for newspapers or for books in those arenas, then borrowed their language from the movies. And then when the next movies were made, they borrowed from the books, they borrowed from the movies. And so, for example, a lot of what we think of as cowboy language actually was invented. It was invented by fiction writers and screenplay writers. Same for a lot of the mob talk. A lot of the mob talk, there are transcripts in for the FBI have of mob people saying, "Oh yeah, we got that term from Goodfellas. We picked it up from the movies. Yeah, that's not one of our terms. We just borrowed it from the movies." And certainly with military shows, there's a lot of that going on. They'll watch the guys who are writing Homeland are really good. They're pretty good for screenplay writers, but they're not all ex-military in the shows.
Here's a piece of slang, which apparently comes from real life. Danny from Des Moines has emailed us. "I'm a former Marine, and I remember once when my daughter was in college, I came to visit and asked her roommate where the head was. Most confused and mortified look I've ever seen." Do you use the term head for a toilet or a latrine?
Not in the Army.
Not in the Army. What do you call it where you are?
Well, latrine, actually. You hit it right there. That's what it would be.
Head, is that... Is that strictly a Marine or maybe a Navy term?
Both, yeah, naval and Marines. Yep, absolutely. It comes from the jargon and slang of the seafaring world, so it predates the naval militaries.
Do we know why a head is called a head?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know. Another one of those terms is lost deep in the mists of English. English is a strange beastie that borrows many places, and sometimes its origins are unusual.
So this is something that could actually go back from a few centuries, perhaps.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I think I don't have the data right here in front of you. I'm quite certain it goes back to at least the 1700s.
And we have an email that came in about what we were talking about. The first thing that you learned that a rifle is not a gun; it's a weapon. We have someone writing in telling us that the rifle is not called a gun because the barrel in the rifle has rifling. It is okay to call machine guns and artillery guns because they originally were not rifled. So there's at least that technical differences, but I guess they are all weapons, which would make it militarily correct to call them all weapons. So that would be the correct term at all times. Does that sound good to you?
Well, I actually don't have that much experience working around artillery and things like that. And that's a really interesting explanation. It makes perfect sense. But for me, living in it, my reality was just that my rifle was a weapon.
I've never heard the word rifle explained until this concept of rifling came up. Barrett, you're the lexicographer. Do you know more about this?
Well, it's a really good example, and I'm probably going to have to make a note of that to use in the future. It's a really great example of how inside of a particular profession, and it's called being a soldier a profession, inside a particular profession, the language is so utterly specific because it has to be. And so you might need to know a thing like that there is a rifling inside that particular weapon. Outside of the military, we have examples like a psychotherapist might say that somebody's anal retentive, which has kind of become popularized to call somebody's anal, meaning they're very picky or particular. But these are very different meanings, even though they are related. So you have one whole set of meanings outside a field and some very precise meanings inside a field, which make them jargon.
Sean emails that I went to basics at Fort Bliss, Texas, an air defense artillery base at the time. Gun, according to our drill sergeants, always equaled artillery pieces like howitzers, which are pretty big guns and not anything that you would hold in your hand. And is that, again, you didn't deal much directly with, well, certainly not with those sort of fire, with those sort of weapons in your case, Eric?
No, I was in an infantry, a light infantry battalion even, and we didn't have access to that kind of stuff. Although we did receive support oftentimes from artillery units who were adjacent or nearby to us, where they would fire into our area of operations to help us.
We have a caller on line one. This is Todd from Effingham County, and good morning. You're on Focus.
Hi. Nice to talk to you guys. I often hear the term, such as someone interviewed, I found a cache of weapons, when it seems to me the term should really be a cache of weapons. Is that something that's changed over time, or the pronunciation of that particular word in the spelling?
Eric, is that something in your experience?
Well, my experience, it was always a cache of weapons, although I've heard people go back and forth on cache versus cache.
And Grant, can you open us up on the cache versus cache?
I can, and there's a reason for this confusion. It's because we've borrowed it from the French. The French verb is cache, C-A-C-H-E-R. It means to hide. And if you have the past tense of hide, meaning it hidden, it is cache, C-H-C-H-E, with an accent over it. However, it's been anglicized also as cache, which is not the French pronunciation for that past tense, but it is for the noun. So what we have here is probably multiple borrowings into English from the French of various forms of the same verb, and therefore the confusion. The best use is probably cache.
Okay, but the best or the most common?
Both.
Okay. Todd, thank you very much for your call. I'm wondering, in a case like that, is this a term that is mostly a military term, or is this also going in and out between languages and in different contexts in other places? And if Grant, if I could throw that one to you.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, cache also exists in many other fields. You can find in the New World, among the language of French trappers, they would make a cache where they would hide their furs or supplies so that when it came back through on a trail. And then in the modern day, you'll find cache in computing, where it's a particular bit of memory where data is temporarily stored, saved up, and then reused a little bit later, and then the cache is cleared so it can be used again to have a little data, extra data stored in there. So it's a broad spectrum of uses here in the New World, in North America.
This is Focus on WYLL, and we are talking about military slang with Eric Swenson, who used quite a lot of it when he was in the Army in Iraq, and also with Grant Barrett, who knows a lot about slang in general. He's a lexicographer and the co-host of the public radio program Away With Words. And we're getting your examples of military slang, your examples and your knowledge. We love to hear from you at 1-800-222-9455. You can email your question to us at WILL-talk@illinois.edu. Phone number again, 1-800-222-WILL. And I believe we have another caller here. This is line two from Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. When I was in the Army, we had a different explanation for why a rifle should not be called a gun. It didn't have anything to do with the rifling of the barrel. It had to do with the distinction between a rifle and a pistol. In combat, if you called a rifle a gun, you could easily confuse things. Of course, pistols have rifling, too. So, anyway, that was during the Korean War. Maybe things have changed since then.
Now, were you told to call everything a weapon?
No, we didn't use the word weapon at all. Actually, each weapon had its own particular nomenclature.
So you would call a pistol and a...
Well, we'd call a pistol, it was a gun. We could call it a pistol, too, but it was a gun.
But a rifle was...
A rifle was never a gun. A rifle was always a rifle, just because you couldn't confuse the two of them. You shouldn't confuse the two of them.
Now, did you have any other weapons that you were having the talk about at the time, like big guns?
Well, there was a recoilless rifle, for example, which was a kind of shoulder-held, you want to call it, cannon. But it had rifling, so you called it a recoilless rifle. Mortars were mortars, and cannons were cannons of various sorts.
Now, all the weapons that you were working with at the time, did you stay pretty precise in the language, or did any slang terms build up to describe some of them?
I can't recall any slang terms. There may have been. I just don't recall them.
Okay, but it's interesting. Of course, this has been about 60 years from Korea till now, but this thing does sound like it's fluid, even though, of course, the military and the armed forces will have a long, continuous tradition. There are a lot of people moving in and out, and they're going to a lot of different places, and the technology changes.
Well, I would think so. Besides, of course, in the Korean War, it was a draftees army. It wasn't a professional army in that sense. And that may have had something to do with the change in terminology also.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for your call. Grant Barrett, that brings up just a short question for me. When the Army is draftee and people are coming from all throughout society in large numbers as compared to the volunteer Army we have now, does that affect the slang, and does that affect the slang in terms of whether or not it comes back into civilian practice?
Yes, it definitely does. If somebody was drafted, they're less likely to spend a long time in the service, which means they're going to reenter the civilian world much more quickly. They're going to have a less jargon, more slang, and they're going to be dropping it into everyday speech more frequently. It's the long-timers who are in the service for 10, 20, 30 years. Those are the guys who are not bringing that language back probably to their families and their communities. I probably should have just asked your last caller if he knew the term Diki Dao, which is a really great example of a Korean War term. It means crazy. It was brought back by soldiers and for a time had some currency in books and movies and various places. Because it's a good example of some of the foreign terms that our military bring back with them. Gung Ho is another one of those.
Gung Ho comes from what language?
Of Chinese.
From Chinese. Eric, you're in an Arabic-speaking country. Were there any Arab words that were circulating as part of your terminology and slang?
Well, you're stretching my memory. I actually can't really think of anything. We did actually use the term Hajj or Haji a lot, as Garrett mentioned earlier. I think maybe that's the closest I think we came.
I was wondering when I saw the word Haji, and by Haji, exactly what are you referring to?
Well, that's a very blanket and probably mildly offensive term, but it essentially meant anybody who was not a part of the army or your unit. So any civilian or contractor who was not part of your unit and who was presumably Arabic of some kind.
Okay. My understanding, when I hear the word Haji, I think of two things. It could technically refer to a Muslim who has made pilgrimage, but something perhaps that might loom larger in American imaginations is the Indian boy or teenager in the Johnny Quest cartoon adventure mm-hmm. series. And that's actually the first thing that comes to mind. I think, Grant, you were mentioning it's actually older than the current conflict and that a different army was using
that
one.
Yeah, this is one of the terms that we got from the British. It does refer to someone who has made the pilgrimage to Mecca. That's one of the seven pillars of Islam, something you as a devout Muslim are supposed to do within your life is make a pilgrimage. And then you get the honorific of Hajj, and it is it comes in various forms in the various languages for the cultures that have Islam as a major religion. And it is used as a blanket term for the locals, basically, anybody who's not part of the military force. And it has been used derogatorily, but I have frequently heard it and seen it used in a way that it's utterly like, you just say Mac, buddy, Joe, pal, you know, hey guy, you know, hey Hodge, something like that. So it really varies on the context.
It may not be meant, I don't know how it's taken by
by
Arab speakers in the country you're in.
Right.
Line three, Logren from Vermilion County. Good morning, you're on Focus.
Good morning. I was in the Navy, 68 to 76. And I don't know if the term is still used for the request form called a CHIT, C-H-I-T. I assume it's origined out of the British Navy. But could you expound on that?
I've heard that term, but I've never known what it comes from. Grant, do you know anything about it?
Really, this is an excellent, excellent, great term. And the reason that this goes back to the British military experience in India. The British bought it back from Hindi. It means a note or a pass. And it came into British English and then into their military service and then into the United States. And it has existed in English ever since the late 18th century.
And
it emanated from the Indians?
Yeah, it comes from Hindi. Yeah, it's Hindi.
Okay.
And the British brought it back from their experience in the subcontinent.
And Eric, were you using that in Iraq? When you needed supplies, and you had to do the paperwork, what did you call it?
Well, I certainly have never heard the term CHIT before. It wasn't something we ever used. I'm not sure that I can't think of a slang term. I'm sure something existed, but we would use some kind of jargon or something.
Can I ask your caller while he's on the line if he used the term GEDUNK when he was in the service?
The term EVAC?
GEDUNK.
No, I don't know that.
Well, it's I understand that it's GEEDUNK. And it's the equivalent of pogi, so it's the sweets or ice cream that you might go down to the mess to get.
Well, that was not used as such, but we had gee-dunk was what it was called.
Yeah, that's the word. That's the word that I'm saying. I'm sorry. The line.
Oh, okay. I'm cell phone connection is a little distorted, but
and gee-dunk, what is that again? From your memory in the service, what is that food again?
Any treat, any fast food or generally sweet treats.
Okay, so could it be something like a candy bar?
Oh yes, anything that basically was out of the ordinary, chocolates, candies, anything that was not normal, healthy food.
Not, Grant. Grant, where does that come from again?
Oh, we're pretty sure it comes from a comic strip that used to run in the Chicago newspapers in the 1920s and from a column that ran there. And supposedly, I don't know how sure this is, it refers to the sound of dipping your donut in your coffee. Gedunk.
That makes perfect sense now that I think. would it go to donuts and pastries, things like that?
Yeah, it's even today, gedunk has a wide variety of uses. Some people say it's only the place where you get those things, those sweets. Some people say it's only ice cream. Some people say it's any kind of treat that ordinarily you wouldn't be served. Some people say it's the thing that you sneak down for after hours.
Pogi bait in the case of, in your case,
well,
Eric. I mean, would you talk about that if you wanted to go get something sweet?
Yeah. If you you want to go down to the PX, maybe you'd say you're going to go get some pogi bait, or maybe you were trying to fish something out of a friend of yours who got a care package recently from family, or who had been to a PX recently. You were looking for some pogi bait. Yeah.
Okay, Logren. Thank you very much for calling. That covered a lot of ground there. And just about another minute left. This is, I feel we're just covering part of the issue here. Part of the subject of military slang, because you were talking a little before about just how all encompassing this slang can be, and how while some of it is just relatively easy labels, some of it sounds like they just are words that have meanings that are just hard to replace once with civilian language.
You know, and I think it's an interesting point, too, about this being a volunteer versus a drafted army. And the military today makes up such a small proportion of the population of the United States. I found that that when I'm close to a base or I'm close to some kind of veteran services, a lot of the slang and the terminology is well recognized. But the further I get away from that, I'm finding myself around fewer and fewer veterans and professionals associated with that, and nobody recognizes those terms. So certainly in a drafted Army where you had a much larger number of young men, maybe these terms would be more established.
And Grant, maybe are there examples in the case during the times of a large draft army of slang that made it into general civilian language, maybe out of World War II or Vietnam?
Oh yeah, there's a ton of this stuff. I love the term snafu. We'll say that it stands for situation normal, all fouled up. You can find this in business jargon. You can find it in the mouths of Congress people and newscasters. And this is a military term that comes out of just before the Second World War, probably from the Marines. We mentioned gung-ho before. Gung-ho is one of those. These days, it's got a slangy use inside the service. It tends to mean somebody who is like all about the service. You know, they're all about, you know, doing the right thing. And then outside of the military, it tends to refer to somebody who is just like putting in all the effort that they're supposed to put into, who's, you know, enthusiastic, but isn't necessarily a company man. There's bite the bullet was a term that I wanted to bring up from the American Civil War. If you were getting your leg sawed off without anesthetic, you might be given a bullet. And don't think of these small things that you would put in a pistol. Think of the larger ones, you know, a few inches long. You might be given one of those to clamp between your teeth as they sawed at you, trying to take off the
cancer. Pretty grim, but this is something that was really happening, so that's the slang. Well, that's all the time we have for this talk about military slang. It's been a fascinating hour. And thanks to my guests, lexicographer and slang specialist Grant Barrett and Iraq War Army veteran Eric Swenson. And thanks to all of you who called or emailed questions. Our apologies for anyone who didn't make it to the air. And we invite you to continue the discussion on today's program at WYLL at will.illinois.edu/focus. Tomorrow, we look at the future of Mandela, future of South Africa after the death of Nelson Mandela. This is Focus on WILL.